What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that doesn't slam windows shut. It's really bad for the frames and the hinges. Coming up, magical masonry in the Potteries, really late goals, lots of keeper calamities, and Grimsby's admin left with fish all over his face. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we are coming to you on transfer deadline day. We'll talk a little bit about that, but not too much. We're more focused on the football on this podcast. Hope you get what you want anyway. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I am joined, as ever, by Sam Parkin. How are you doing, Sam?
Really good, Matt. Good to speak to you both.
Likewise. Adrian Clarke's back with us too. You okay, Clarkie?
Yeah, a bit fed up. Obviously, Arsenal losing yesterday. So, yeah, I'm just moping a bit. But hopefully this will pick me up.
I'm sure it will. Before we get into things then, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. Responsible gambling, that leads me nicely on to the transfer market. A bit of irresponsible stuff going on, but hopefully some responsible stuff for your club, listener. I just thought we'd have a little chat about some deals that have caught the eye. Give me a couple then, Adrian, that you like or don't.
Well, Marcelino Nunez from Norwich to Ipswich is a funny one, isn't it?
He's really embraced it, hasn't he? Crikey. I love that whipping up of the crowd at Portman Road on Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. I think once you show you got the cojones to make that kind of move, you've got to own it, haven't you? So, yeah, he's a blue now, and he should make the first Old Farm derby. Bit tasty, shouldn't it? I think it's early October when that happens. So yeah, fair play to him for having the courage to make the move. Ollie Palmer obviously has been a big player for Wrexham, hasn't he, down the years. I guess the team's just outgrown him, really, going up to the Championship. And yeah, he's moved back and going to Swindon. So I'm guessing, Sam, quite happy with that for your old team.
Well, yeah, Harry Smith got injured, didn't he, for what looks like the season. So yeah, that's just like for like, isn't it? He'll score bundles of goals, I would suggest, at that level. Scored a couple the other day, I think, in the League Cup. So, yeah, really good signing and should kick Swindon on even further.
Yeah, just a couple of Southampton have been really busy. I think they continue to be today as well. But obviously to get Finnazaz and Tom Fellows, definitely two of the best young players in the Championship, it's good business, isn't it? It feels like solid work from them. Just don't know quite where Fellows can fit in because they've been sort of playing with wing-backs and narrow number 10s. But I'm sure they'll find a way. I think Will still might end up changing the shape a little bit. Azaz will be more of a 10. Fellows will play on the right wing, I guess. And then they've got numerous strikers. So yeah, two good pickups there for the Saints, I think.
How about you, Sam? You've got a couple more recent moves that you'd like to make note of.
Yeah, Marcus Force to Bolton, from Middlesbrough. Just think League One. If he plays down the middle, he could get good return of goals. Obviously played a lot of football off the right for Middlesbrough.
You're not going to do the line? I did it for like 15 podcasts.
Force his way into the reckoning.
May the fours be with you, I think was the one that I want. Yeah. Different okay. Funds for different needs.
Yeah, definitely. And more of a collective here, just Sheffield United looking at their bench, I suppose, just rolling the dice. Instead of Clarkie mentioned Tanganga there, we'll come to him later. Oh, he was a dream every time I saw him at Millwall last year. So, and he looked like the best player on Saturday for them. So Tanganga, Matos from Chelsea today, who's impressed on previous loan moves. Danny Ings on the bench on Saturday, Chong as well. They've strengthened in all departments, really. So now the proof's going to be in the pudding. They got to produce results quick, smart. Otherwise, the manager's going to be under huge pressure. And one maybe, but it's almost done. Adamida to Swansea. Didn't feature, obviously, in the Old Firm game at the weekend. £6 million, a big outlay. And yeah, I suppose when he went up to Celtic, I expected him to probably stick around for many a year rather than move back to a Championship club. I probably felt it might be, obviously, to a Premier League club if he'd matured into a really good centre forward. So interestingly, that he's coming back to the Championship, but he'll be a really good signing, I'm sure.
I'll give you one just before we round this. Will Alves to Huddersfield on loan from Leicester. I've seen this kid play for Leicester's under-21s a lot a couple of years ago, and he was absolutely outstanding. He got a really bad injury, though, in a Youth Cup game. I think it was against Wolves a couple of years ago, and he's not been able to get back to full fitness. But if he can, that could be a nice one for Huddersfield on loan. All right, then. We'll leave the transfer business there and get into the Championship. Where Middlesbrough went top after maintaining their perfect start by squeezing past Sheffield United. They're the only team to have won all their games so far in Tier 2. It's their best start in more than 30 years. And speaking of strong starts, West Bromwich Albion have had a very decent one under new boss Ryan Mason. On Saturday, the Baggies ended Stoke's 100% start of their own. And in the process, they leapt like a frog over them in the table. Sam, you were commentating on this one. Ryan Mason was watching from the stands, and Nat Phillips' goal settled it. It serves us right for praising Victor Johansson so much last week, I guess.
Yeah, and he very nearly conceded a ridiculous opening goal a few moments previously. He came kind of tiptoeing out of his 6-yard box, preempting where the delivery from Mikey Johnson was going to land, and it almost went over his head if it wasn't for some ultimately quick thinking from him to release the ball when he was like slightly over the line. But yeah, calamity really the goal. I felt that the centre half, who's been brilliant, Boson Luau, was just going to deal with it. Just unnecessarily came into his area, tried to claim it, spilt it, which Nat Phillips obviously gobbled up. Phillips was sensational. Headed everything that came in the box, obviously got the only goal, organiser, and that was a back four that had George Campbell, who's a centre-half they bought from MLS, playing right-back, and Callum Stiles is playing left-back at the moment, who's a really good footballer. Really surprised to see him doing such a fine job there, because for the majority, he kept Sorba Thomas pretty quiet. Sorry, it was Campbell that was up against Sorba Thomas, who kept him quiet. Thomas went over to the right laterally to have a bit of a go at Stiles, but both fullbacks were brilliant. It's a new look West Brom back line, but very in keeping to how they were under Carlos Corberan. I would suggest this was a brilliant defensive display where they limited Stoke to three or four chances throughout. I thought that Mowat and Malumbai in the middle of the pitch, their experience, their nous, was in contrast really to Stoke's midfield that didn't really function. I thought that's where West Brom had the upper hand. They're very narrow, West Brom. I don't know if this will evolve as the season goes on. They've obviously lost that the width that Darnell Furlong kind of supplies from right back. The two outside forwards, Mikey Johnson and Jed Wallace, come really in field and try and pick up the ball in the half space. If they can't find hit them, they go forward to Hegabah, who, for anyone that hasn't seen him, real handful. Brilliant back to goal play, showed some lovely touches, great awareness in the second half, bringing people in. Needs a goal, because I think the honeymoon period only lasts so long when you're not scoring goals, and he didn't really look like getting off the mark in the Championship. But his all-round game, really, really good. So pleasantly surprised with West Brom, because I probably expected them to be probably a little bit more possession-based. But what I'm seeing is probably a West Brom of old to a degree, playing to their strengths, solid defensively. I think you'll want more from the forward players. That's only natural, inevitable. But at the moment, the strength of the side is the structure without the ball, and the canniness and the nous of the defensive players. Any one of them could have been man of the match. I probably would just go for Phillips for getting the goal for obviously that sterling work. And then for Stoke, just quickly, I know Clarkey will go on to them, just lack that cohesion a little bit. In contrast, really, to West Brom's performance, want more from Junho, the number 10. A couple of sporadic moments, but Seko's a nice passer of the ball. Lewis Baker, anonymous. So I just think that midfield trio is probably the area of the pitch that I would hone in on and probably need a bit of improvement. But they'll have better days, and the reality is it's been a tremendous start.
And Nat Phillips feeling supersonic, all part of the Ryan Mason master plan, as Victor Johansson watched the ball slide away. Nat Phillips was going out with Liam Gallagher's daughter, by the way. That's why I'm doing all those
Oasis.
Not seeing much of her. She's at every single gig, isn't she?
And why not? Clarkie, obviously Stoke had a brilliant start to the season. Mark Robins doesn't strike me as the most gregarious character, but I think it's fair to say he's taking the positives. I say that because he used the words positive and positivity four times in one sentence in his post-match interview.
Impressive. Yeah, no, it's decent that. Whenever I've spoke to him, he's been pretty dour. Like he's always moaning about something, isn't he? Yeah, look, I think, well, Sam worked on the game. You know, he summed it up very well. I think you have to look at the midfield. It's been fine so far. They've done all right, Baker and Sesko and Bejinho, but I think you need a bit more creativity. You need a bit more goal threat maybe from the number 10. For me, Bejinho should be a backup, you know, competing with Sorber Thomas or Manhoef and have someone else in there, maybe at number 10, that can score more goals than he can. Barmer had five shots, didn't he, in this game? Obviously, one of them hit the post. So I do think he could come good. I think he could be a striker that gets quite a few goals for them. But my takeaway from the game, it's pretty simple. Stoke just played into the hands of West Brom. West Brom now had to defend the box. They didn't give a lot away. And it was cross after cross after cross. I think Sorber Thomas put in 12 open play crosses and one was successful. So what I would say there is, read what's happening here. Natalie Phillips and co, I've got this in hand. Let's try a different way. And they were a bit slow on the sort of uptake there.
Let's move on. We made Sam talk about QPR getting smashed at Coventry, so it's only fair we allow him the chance to discuss a Rangers victory. Their first under Julian Stefan came in derby form. Charlton vanquished at Loftus Road. Perfect response. Sam, I mean, is it too much to say that Stefan's job might have been at risk had he lost this game?
I don't know. I think like a lot of the teams we're going to discuss today, you know, across the divisions, especially the Championship, just have to be patient because the squads aren't finalised yet. That's the reality of it. And how different the QPR look immediately with Norriton Davis coming in, Isaac Hayden. You know, they made three, Sato coming back permanently, comes on and scores a brilliant goal the other day. Immediately, they look like a different entity. And you throw in as well that they didn't play short at the weekend. They were a lot more direct. Obviously, that cost them dearly at Coventry last time out. And the reality is that QPR are a better side, I think, even under Marty Sifuentes, when they give up the majority of the ball. That's fact. I think the results show you that across a long period, that when they're a little bit more direct and a little bit more forceful, they'll win more games. And that can obviously evolve in time. At the moment, I think the necessity was to be hard to beat at the weekend. That said, there was a lot on both goals. It was a really entertaining game, both teams going for it, and a couple of things didn't quite go Charlton's way, so it could have been a different outcome. But I think the reality is, you know, in Bengu and Morrison at centre half, there's probably a bit more mobility there without Cook, with respect to someone who's been an outstanding player and will still have a part to play. Norrington Davis, obviously, I mentioned, and the centre forward. I mean, I'm going to go big on him again because I think it's so long since QPR have had an out and out goal scorer, someone who can run on to 1v1s and finish in that ilk. Kone will be, I think, one of the signings of the season. So two in two for him, all action display, knocking centre-halves about, capped with a goal at the end, a 1v1, a really tidy finish when he looked absolutely shattered. So yeah, brilliant result for QPR, but just a start and much needed for the manager. As you say, Nathan Jones lost six matches now against QPR. I'm not sure how many times he's faced them up, but yeah, not one that he'll look forward to. And again, QPR's, you know, victories at home have been so few and far between for three, four, five seasons now. Just a win, a couple of goals at the Loft end, which was a reoccurring kind of narrative over the last few seasons, going countless games without scoring at home. And yeah, a brilliant win in a London derby.
First since February at Loftus Road for them. Charlton-wise then, Clarkie, three defeats on the spin in league and cup for them. Only win so far came on opening day. We knew it was going to be tricky for them readjusting to life back in the Championship. And so it has proved to be thus far.
Yeah, exactly. But they lost to Leicester. There's no shame in that. And then obviously this one, Queen's Park Rangers, they came out on the wrong side. Relatively even game. I mean, they just didn't defend as well as QPR. Pretty poor defending for the goals. I mean, it was a lovely goal from QPR's point of view, the Sato one, but Lloyd Jones did get himself twisted up, didn't he? Yeah, he got turned inside out. And then for the last one, I think it's Kane Ramsey gets in Amari Bell's way. They both, there's no talking. They collide and Kone goes through. Look at the first goal. Gets in too easy down the right. Ball across the face of goal and Ramsey lets Smith come inside him. And yeah, it's basic errors really, I think, from Charlton in this game, which isn't like them. They're normally very well organised. What I've seen so far, you wonder whether the Coventry Doherty axis is going to be enough in the Championship. Didn't really sort of, had a lot of the ball in the game, Charlton, but didn't really do enough with it maybe. But yeah, only two goals scored so to this point. That's the problem for Charlton. Are they going to score enough goals? I'm looking at some of the stats though. They've made seven big chances. There's not many teams that's made more than seven big chances so far. Their conversion rate has been abysmal, the second lowest of all the teams in the Championship. Charlton have converted 3.77% of their chances. To put that in perspective, those at the top end in that department are converting around 20%. So, you know, that makes a big difference. So they've got to get it right at the top end of the pitch.
And the Coventry Doherty Axis, a great name for a 70s prog rock band, I'm sure you will agree. Like QPR, Wrexham also earned their first league win of the season on Saturday with 2-0 victors at the Den against Millwall. We'll start with the winners then, Clarke. I did enjoy the fact that Lewis O'Brien saw Jack Clark's 90 plus 16 minute equaliser for Exeter Derby and said, hold my stopwatch, 90 plus 18 for him to cap the win here after Kiefer Moore had put them in front and then given Stephen Bender a bit of stick while he lay on the floor.
It's a big win, wasn't it, for Wrexham, Phil Parkinson. Not that I think he should have been under pressure, but the results weren't great. They weren't always matching sort of what they were producing. They rode their luck in the game, I think it's fair to say.
21 shots against.
Yeah, and they only had six themselves, six shots, Wrexham. They kind of get that back three is really becoming a back five. I think for them to sort of progress a bit, they've got to get those wing backs a bit higher up and not allow themselves to get pinned in. But when you've got Kiefer Moore and he sticks his big head on stuff, then you've got a chance, haven't you? And, you know, the goalie's got to look at himself there, getting out-jumped by a Kiefer Moore. But, yeah, you know, it's a diagonal cross from one of the centre-halves. Ask the question of the keeper. The keeper fouls that question. And Moore knocks it into the empty net. So that they're going to score goals that way, aren't they? Definitely. I mean, they put in a lot of crosses, Wrexham, just full stop. But they're really accurate. They don't just sort of do it willy-nilly. They do it with quality. They really do. And then I think the centre-halves and the wing-backs will put good balls into the danger zone, and they're very good at getting on the end of them. I think the key for opponents will be, can they pick up second balls inside the box when Wrexham win the first one? So, yeah, we'll see. Obviously, the big talking point was the injury. That's why there was such a delay. Danny Ward goes off with an elbow injury. Okonkwo comes on and makes some good saves. So well done to him. The other point of note was Callum Doyle. Made his first league start for Wrexham, sort of left side centre half, and looked really good. So him, Connor Cody and Max Cleworth are the back three now. And I think that back three's got a good chance of doing all right at Championship level. So yeah, look, they were pinned in, had to ride their luck, but took their chances when they came. So yeah, well done Wrexham. They've scored at least two in five of their six games now in all comps, Wrexham. So you have to say that part of the pitch is working all right.
Yeah, I'm slightly surprised that they think Danny Ward's a better option than Okonkwo from what we've seen of him in goal. But there we go, they know better than me, I suppose. Millwall, Sam, we've been praising them for weeks and weeks, and I had a look after this game and realised that they've lost both their home league games without scoring. Feels like this one was pretty unlucky, certainly in terms of the XG and the shots that they managed. But that'll be a slight concern for Alex Neil, won't it?
You know a lot, mate, because you only need to look at Okonkwo's save from, I think it was Ivanovic in the last knockings of that game at the weekend. Yeah, I'm really surprised that Phil Parkinson's gone that way thus far. And obviously he's had that decision probably taken out of his hands now, where he's going to obviously give Okonkwo a little bit more game time. So yeah, I don't think there's too much to worry about from Millwall. He bemoaned the quality with the ball, the use of the ball, and I think none more so than when they got into really threatening areas, their final ball or their final finish was found wanting. And I think huge similarities between Saturday's defeat and obviously the Middlesbrough defeat as well. Could have been in front, could have been a couple in front and get punished in the second half, whether the absence of Tanganga is having a, or going to have a little bit of an effect short term, we'll have to wait and see. But Caleb Taylor's a really good signing. He was on the bench at the weekend, had that brilliant loan spell at Wickham from West Brom. He'll be a really good pickup, I think, for them in time. And I think the reality is the squad's still not really stocked. And having no Denore, no Aziz, no Doughty, no Mitchell, that's possibly four starters there out of the Millwall 11 at the weekend, probably added to their issues. No panic where Millwall are concerned, I don't think. Just a game where they didn't take their opportunities and obviously got done. The first one, the keeper, I'd probably look at to deal with that, despite the size of Kiefer Moore, and get done with a counter-attack for the second. So the break, probably not the worst thing in the world for Alex Neil, just to fine-tune one or two things.
Yeah, a few gaffers saying that, I think, as well, this Monday. Final game for us in the Championship, appropriately as well, a game at the Vicarage, ended in a Desmond. Watford and Southampton sharing the spoils here. Sam, you've got a new muse. His surname is Irankuda, and you're starting to fall slowly in love with him.
Yeah, he's been incredible, hasn't he? I think even when they beat QPR at home, he was the standout player. I think he got an assist on that day. Yeah, I mean, the free kicks wonderfully struck. Looks incredibly talented, and they looked like a bit of a different kettle of fish when Barr joined him, actually. Barr and Vatter, two, you know, other really good young players, not introduced until midway through the second half. And I think he actually ditched the back three set up that has served them relatively well so far this season, but I think that gives you an opportunity to get some of those attacking talented young boys onto the pitch all at the same time. So Irankuda and Barr supporting a centre forward, that's pretty mouthwatering from what I've seen from Irankuda this season and Barr last season. So yeah, I don't think it was a brilliant Watford performance, certainly for 45 minutes. I think Southampton were the better side, but salvaged something from the game. So yeah, and I think the system's probably the most interesting thing, just keeping an eye on that and seeing maybe if that changes in the weeks ahead. But yeah, in terms of Irankuda, looks like top quality acquisition. And as I said on a different medium recently, if you throw enough darts, every now and again, it's going to fly into the treble 20.
Some career path as well. I mean, born in Tanzania, he's an Australia international. This is Nestoria Irankuda we're talking about. Started at Adelaide United, took the well-trodden path to Bayern Munich, loan at Grasshoppers of Zurich. Now he's at Watford. His head must be absolutely spinning. And what about Southampton?
He's only 16, isn't he? We're joking.
he's a veritable veteran at the age of 19. What about Southampton then, Adrian? Sturdy on the road, aren't they? Drew here, drew at Ipswich, won comfortably at Norwich in the Cup. Important to get a point from this game, obviously ahead in a couple of weeks of the big one, which is the derby against Portsmouth for the first time in forever after the break.
Yeah, I think the Southampton we've seen so far might look quite different to the Southampton of the future. There's a lot of change going on there. A lot of incomings, some outgoings. He is going to mix things up, I think, tactically. It's interesting, they only had 45% of possession here in the game, which you absolutely wouldn't associate with Southampton. They were unlucky because Flynn Downs was supposed to play and he pulled out an hour before the kickoff feeling ill. So they've had to go with a sort of different shape. Ryan Fraser was playing very central, which I think he's played most positions on the pitch already this season, Ryan Fraser. So it was a bit weird. There was a lot on Shay Charles as the sort of sole actual central midfielder in the game. And I definitely think that impacted on sort of Southampton's ability to control the match and maybe their ability without the ball to control Watford's attack. So yeah, when they've got the full complement of players, I think it'll be really different. And I think that's the way the game panned out. He ended up having Ronnie Edwards at right wing back as well. So it was a bit of a mess. He'll probably actually be happy with the point. It's like two apiece at Watford. There's no shame in that when things go wrong. They're creating loads, and that's the main thing. I think the main big positive, got the highest expected goals in the division. Cameron Archer, obviously, they score from two set pieces in this game. But that they will click. And when they do click, I think Southampton look like they'll be there or thereabouts. So yeah, they'll take the point here because things didn't go their way.
All right, no championship action this coming weekend. Then as we head into the international break, we're going to talk about League One next. Where Cardiff continue to set the pace. Stevenage are only a point behind them. Bradford unbeaten in third place. Not so good for Posh, Port Vale and Wickham, though. All of those yet to win. We're going to go for the top there. Remember last week when we said that win for Plymouth against Blackpool would get them up and running? Final score at the Cardiff City Stadium on Saturday. Cardiff City 4, Plymouth Argyle 0. No crisis then for Cardiff, which was very much one of the plot lines of the summer, wasn't it? Really nice goal to get the party started, couple just before half time to knock the stuffing out of Argyle. And I guess what will particularly please them is that they had four different goal scorers. Three of those got assists too. I mean, this is not far off a perfect day, is it?
Great day for Cardiff, definitely. I mean, they're flying, aren't they? Fifth clean sheet in six. Absolutely superb. And this is a young side, you know, a lot of rookie players in it, particularly at the back, guys that are tremendously experienced. I'm really liking Brian Barry Murphy's work here because, as well, it takes probably a strong manager to leave Perry and G and Callum Robinson on the bench. And that's what he's doing. Robinson wasn't always a fixture, but he's a very experienced player in that dressing room and was a bit of a main man last year. Can't get in at the minute, nor can Perry NG. So yeah, well played. I think this game was a terrible reflection on Plymouth, actually, the way that how poor they are without the ball. It's just not working. 13 conceded now. Joint most in the division. Really open if you look at the goals. They could have had more, Cardiff. In midfield, particularly weak, Plymouth. Ryan Wintle was the dominant player here, getting it, giving it, spreading it out wide. And yeah, they caused them a lot of problems. Later on, Isaac Davis had one amazing run on the break where he almost assisted a goal. And then he got a goal where basically just one long pass to him and he was away and he finished it. But yeah, for me, the sort of stars of the show were Chris Willock and Ruben Colwill. Loads of shots, loads of chances created, moments of real quality from both of them. And again, I'd credit the manager here because Chris Willock looked like a player whose career was nosediving faster than mine did. he just looked like a player that was on the slide, wasn't getting in the team last year. You know, we know about his talent. Well, he's in the team now and he looks like the player that sort of got, you know, was flying a few years back. So yeah, it's really exciting, I think, for Cardiff fans to see so many good young players enjoying their football and playing an attacking brand of football as well. So yeah, lovely times for them. But for Plymouth, Tom Cleverley's got to maybe make some changes here. It doesn't seem like the personnel is clicking and the structure of the team is getting opened up far too easily. So yeah, this is a big window, I think, for Tom Cleverley.
Yeah, it shouldn't probably be the gulf in the two teams that there was at the weekend. And I don't think that's on the manager. It's obviously on the recruitment. But the flip side of it is, and yes, it's early days, but Cardiff have probably taken more stick than any other club on this podcast over the last 5 years or whatever, to have an identity. And so quickly, and to have someone that's aligned with playing younger players, six academy players in the starting 11 at the weekend. As Clarky says, just great, I think, for the supporters to have a little bit of a plan. And the manager and the players have certainly executed it perfectly in the first few weeks.
Very much so. Elsewhere, Barnsley beat Huddersfield 3-1 at Oakwell to bank the rights to braggadociousness to be used at their leisure until the teams meet again. It felt like it was a weekend where goalkeeping errors were writ large, Sam. We saw another one here from Owen Goodman. I mean, he had a shocker of a first half, didn't he? Lets the cross bounce off him for Keeler Dunn's opener and then gets sent off for clattering David McGoldrick just before half-time. Not so much Goodman as Badman.
Yeah, not good. And you know how dear he is in this household. I've got a pair of his gloves not too far away from me now. Yeah, not his day. No question. It was a red card. Absolutely thundered into David McGoldrick, who just knew probably out of the corner of his eye that he needed to get that little touch. He tried to lift it over Goodman, tough angle, wasn't going to score probably from there. But yeah, gets wiped out. And I think even with 11v11. I thought Barnsley slightly shaded it. And in the second half was problematic for them because they had the goals, they had the lead. And it's difficult when you're playing against 10. I suppose the big positive is, or the continued form really, of Keeler Dunn, who was playing kind of wide or off the front, and McGoldricks and him have essentially switched roles in the last game. Keeler Dunn playing down the middle, McGoldrick off the left, and gets another two goals, playing probably in his favoured position. I think there's rumours of some clubs being in for one of or two of Barnsley's better players, so they'll hope that the window closes tonight without losing anyone.
No, you can't say window closes. It has to slam shut.
No, I don't like going down that route. We love talking about that, don't they? Jesus. But yeah, when it closes tonight, slams tonight, they'll want to have their squad intact, because I think what we've seen so far, they've got half an opportunity. I questioned the centre-half partnership of Earl or Shepherd, whether that's going to be strong enough. Shepherd was on loan at Bradford last year, but he was very good in this game, and I think we know they've got kind of an embarrassment of riches in the middle of the pitch with Connell and Phillips, and various others are unable to get in the side at the moment. So yeah, thoroughly deserved the victory. Good start from Conor Horan. I'm sure quite a few people would have questioned him getting his first role at a club like Barnsley, who will have, of course, aspirations to be around it this season, having never managed before. But I think so far, so good for them, really looking quite impressive.
Yeah, all the plaudits for Barnsley. And congratulations to Nathaniel Ogbeta for winning the award for the most careless back pass of the weekend for Huddersfield's consolation. In League Two, Gillingham have gone top after a narrow win at Oldham. Bromley remain unbeaten. They're in third, saw off Harrogate. Big win for Walsall at MK Dons, who suffer their first league loss of the campaign. After the Lord Mayor's show for Grimsby, who lost at home to Bristol Rovers. More on them later. And five teams are still to win, but Cheltenham did put their first point on the board after drawing at Salford. The game we're going to talk about, though, was at Prenton Park. Eyebrows raised when Notts County appointed Martin Patterson and announced their unusual way of picking the team in the summer. But after a rough start, looks like the Magpies are smoothing the edges. Saturday's win at Tranmere made it three games unbeaten for them. And Matt Dennis, Sam, a man in form, 4-4 for him. I mean, he could have had 5-4 in this game as well. But decent from Notts, isn't it? I think we were all a bit, sceptical of Martin Patterson getting the job. But the fact they come from behind to win and they're in decent form, maybe he's going to make us eat our words.
Yeah, I'm surprised, really. I think they'll still have, you know, a good enough squad, a good enough spine for the team. A lot that remained from last year to be competitive. I'm not sure if they'll be able to emulate what they did last year. I'd still have question marks over the manager. I don't think too much has changed. You look at the statistics, they're still having the lion's share of the ball, pass percentage right up there, maybe slightly less of the possession that they did last year, but it would have been ridiculous numbers. And yeah, having Dennis and obviously Jatta in reserve at the moment is very, very healthy. I think Dennis has always been a really good player. I know he's still only a young lad, but really lost his way last year the last couple of seasons. And I think he went on a short-term deal to Carlisle to try and reinvigorate him, got a few goals, and obviously started, you know, brilliantly well this season against a Tranmere side who have no doubt improved in the summer. I think if you look at names like Nathan Smith, Smallwood in the midfield, who's obviously promoted at Bradford, they've got, you know, really good experience to go with their own threat in Amari Patrick, who those two, Dennis and Patrick, 6 goal involvements apiece so far this season. Two best attacking players on current form in the division, both on the goal sheet at the weekend. Yeah, you know, Notts County have got a decent 11 and really good win for them and a deserved win as well. I think Palmer and Norburn in the centre of the park, they've had a look at a few different permutations in there. Very, very solid as well. So deserved win, and maybe we'll be eating humble pie.
But not too much, Adrian, for Tranmere to worry about in the grand scheme of things. It's been a good start to the season for them.
Yeah, they're not in crisis anymore, are they? I don't think we're going to see Tranmere lose their sort of Football League status. You know, that's been in jeopardy, hasn't it, at times in recent years. Not as long as they've got Amari Patrick anyway. Sam touched on him. Scored in four straight games now. Got a couple of assists as well. And And the impressive thing about that is that he's played half the season probably at left wing back and half the season as the sort of left-sided number 10. So he's given the manager some sort of tactical options. At 29, he's never been amazingly prolific, has he? But seems like he's really comfortable at Tranmere, likes playing for the manager. And they need him to stay fit because they've still got the third lowest expected goals so far this season. They're not massive creators. And if he's not delivering, who else is going to step up? That's the question mark I'd have. Luckily for them, they're still solid at the back. They've been pretty good at the back, haven't they, in recent years? Only let in 4 goals and obviously 2 in this game. So, yeah, I think Tranmere, it's going to be a similar story for Tranmere. Quite a lot of low-scoring matches this season. But, yeah, this is one they just have to pick themselves up from.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll do that relatively quickly as well. Notts at home to Fleetwood on Saturday. Tranmere go to Salford. Right then, not the best week for us prediction-wise, I'm afraid. Chaps, final scores from last week's Carabao Cup special. Sam got 2 points. Adrian and I both got a point each. Sam, you were the only person who predicted that Fulham had beat Bristol City. We all got Everton to beat Mansfield. We all got Grimsby, Man United wrong. Nobody got any perfect scores. So what was that
you,
do then?
Yeah, 3 for you, Matt, 7 for Sam, 15 for me. So, it's a bit one
saying away with it.
Yeah, striding. Well, yeah, not so much last week. Let's see.
Well, look, I've got ground to make up, therefore, so I'm going to go first this week. Plymouth Stockport is the first game on the blocks. Every time Plymouth have a home game, it seems to me like it's against somebody from the north and their supporters have got to travel miles. So I'm going to say that it'll be worth the journey for those Hatters doing it and that they are going to prey on the vulnerabilities of the Pilgrims and win by 2-1. Adrian?
Got 3-1 Stockport.
Nice. Sam, we're going to make it a clean sweep of away victories?
Nah, I've got to go for a juggernaut now, haven't I? Chasing a deficit. I was going to have 2-1 Stockport, but I'll go for the 1-1.
Okay, not a bad shout, I don't think. You can go first, Sam, on the next one. It is Rotherham against Exeter.
God, I quite like the 1-1 here as well. I'm going to go 1-1 again. I'm going down Matt's route.
All right, nice. Adrian?
Yeah, Rotherham, pretty miserable start to the season, but they're better at home. Exeter, definitely better at home. 1-0 to the Millers.
Okay, I'm going to say it's going to be 2-1 to Rotherham. Cambridge Oldham, you're up, Clarkey.
Low scoring. This is stinks of a low scoring game. Cambridge 1, Oldham 0.
It's going to be mine. Sam?
Oh, I'm going to raise that. I'll open it up. Oldham, yeah, struggling for goals. Cambridge, comfortable winners here, 3-1.
Ooh, crikey, goal fest. I will say 0-0, why not? A little bit different. And that is where we are close to being done for today. Let me remind you before we go, though, of that offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply, 18 plus, and for new UK customers only, visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Okay, then, before we go, tweet of the week, slightly different. You'll have seen this one, I'm sure, listener. It came from Grimsby Town, and a man who I think goes by the name of Admin uploaded a video during the team news before the game against Bristol Rovers, and he's got a magnetic tactics board, and he's sat in the dugout, just like Ruben Amorim, who became a meme in the week. It says, "Let's take you through our side for this afternoon, ... winking face emoji, hashtag GTFC. We'll hear a little bit of it now.
Oh, hiya. Just going through the town formation for today's League Two fixture against Bristol Rovers. 4 changes from the side that drew 2-2 with Manchester United and eventually beat on penalties in that famous night here at Blundell Park.
8.6 million views that has had. Adrian, I'll be honest with you. When I saw this tweet, I immediately put a fiver on Bristol Rovers to win the game. Yeah. So thank you very much, Grimsby's admin, for that. It's one of those, isn't it? It's divided opinion. A lot of proper football men like Phil Neville saying that this lacks class. It's sort of funny, but you leave yourself open to what happened. You then go and lose the game.
Exactly. Yeah, is it Grimsby's place to try and be funny? I don't know. They've got the plaudits, a magnificent performance, an amazing win. Yeah, and they've kind of took it too far, haven't they? I don't think taking the pee out of a rival manager is really the business of admin. But at the same time, he's quite funny. And you know, 8.5 million views kind of justifies the action, doesn't it? You know, Grimsby as a brand is absolutely flying right now. So, yeah, I'm old-fashioned, so therefore I'm going to give it a thumbs down. But I do understand why there are people out there that are absolutely loving it.
Brackets fan, close brackets, Trey did not enjoy it. Sam, I think they are a Manchester United fan, replied, "Hold that loss, you clowns. You're never getting to League One, let alone the Premier League." Three crying with laughing face emojis. That makes me like the initial tweet more, actually. I'm not sure about you.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't pay any attention to what anyone says, to be honest. On there, I've had a run-in with Man United fans before. They're particularly mean once upon a time. Yeah, I'd not really thought about it too deeply, but listening to Clarkie there, I think you'd both not be surprised that I kind of agree. Do you know what? 10 out of 10 for execution, for the presentation of it. I thought he was excellent. Sign that man up. Very, very good. I did enjoy that, but yeah, I'm sure David Artell probably wasn't asked here because I don't imagine that's his vibe at all. Yeah. Putting the quite obvious chance that they could lose on Saturday afternoon after it, I think it's more just, you know, taking the mickey out of a fellow manager. Probably wouldn't go down too well, would it, with him? So yeah, 10 out of 10 for the delivery, but maybe not the best idea.
All right, well, it's given us some content and lots of people a reason to get very angry or be very amused. So I suppose that's all you can really ask for from Twitter these days, and really all you can ask for from this podcast as well. We're going to leave it there. Many thanks for your company today. Remember, give us a 5-star review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Tell a friend that we're here. All helps us grow the show, which we're always looking to do. We are grateful for your support, though. We'll be back with you with another show next week. For now, from me, from Sam, and from Adrian, it's goodbye.